Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Tonight it's very clear as we're both lying here. There's so many things I want to say.
Speakers are asked to refrain from abusive or profane remarks, disruptive outbursts.
See, come that's on. The problem. Your forked tongue gets you in trouble. Just like,
no, it
you
does make not.
If you don't know who I am, close your mouth. Something's going to fly in your mouth.
You're going to have to be quiet when I'm talking. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do the insubordination.
This is not transparent, open government.
I have never said you were psychotic, though you may be.
I don't know that I care for the narrative.
Well, Stephen, I certainly didn't mean to hurt your feelings or anybody else's, or to imply that any one of us is not doing what...
I'm not a maiden who needs to be saved from my feelings.
Wonderful, thank you.
Love can touch just one time and last for a lifetime.
There's a 2% pay increase included in the fiscal year 26-27 budget for the board departments, totaling $2.5 million across all funds and $1.38 million for the general fund.
You mentioned the 2% raises across the board. I would prefer to see those merit-based and for the department managers to be able to use those at their discretion. I think it would empower our department managers and also help us to retain the quality employees that we need. So if that's an option to look at in, I would like to see that happen.
Madam Chair, I disagree with that. I would like to have the majority of the board support that before we give instruction to the administrator in that fashion.
Yes, nothing like a little dispute about money at the Escambia County Commission budget hearing yesterday morning. That's Ashley Hoffberg. Well, the first voice you heard was Wes Moreno announcing the 2% across the board pay raise for employees for this year to handle the increases in cost of living, you know, Iran war, gas, all the rest. And then, you know, Ashley Hoffberger says, as she has said before, as a business owner, remember, she's the business owner in the group, okay? And she's like, I would rather see pay raises be based on merit, you know, pay the people who do better work, reward them for that, incentivize that. Not so much reward people who aren't doing as good work. That would be the way I would prefer to see it, as she said. And then Stephen Berry says, nope, don't want to do it that way, not interested.
There's a reason that we don't have merit-based, that we haven't adopted a merit-based system, and I know the constitutionals have the ability to do... They have the ability to handle their budgets however they'd like to. For us to institute that is to open us up to shade meetings like we had this morning, multiple ones of those every single meeting. I don't think that that's, you know, having a five-person board that's going to hear from, you know, Johnny got a raise and John did not get a raise and how come, you know, she got 3% and I only got 1%? And those questions are going to come directly from employees to the board. And I think it just delves us into personnel matters that we don't have any business in directly.
Well, actually, isn't it the county administrator that should be handling all of that? And if you create a, you know, understandable metric for evaluating people, then they won't come to you and complain about that because they can look at the answer, which is right on their evaluation. Lumen May, who is always going to be the champion of not merit-based, but instead helping out the lower end of the pay scale. It's always about helping those folks out. That's the only thing he ever talks about.
Did a CRA meeting today and looking at the medium incomes of people who work here, who do all the support jobs, and those are the ones that answer the phone, pick up the paper. And if we're going to have people with six figures that, quite frankly, have other perks, and we have people that are in Brownsville waiting in the food line, but they're cleaning the bathrooms in our county, that's unsettling to me. And whether I have support or not, I don't believe that it's across the board that we give anybody a raise. When you got people that are making six figures and you got people that are making $35,000, I mean, let me just tell you that one extra percent or two extra percent to somebody that's making $35,000, $45,000 is significant, or whether or not they put gas in their car or whether they buy food for their children.
I mean, remember, at heart, Lumen May is a liberal Democrat who believes in equal pay for everybody, you know, kind of that socialist model. That's his way of thinking. You know, I get along well with Lumen, but he is definitely everybody ought to make the same amount. It offends him that some people make a lot of money and other people don't make enough money, and he thinks that the pay raises shouldn't be going to these, you know, fat cats in their director's positions and instead should be going to the janitors who work. Now, in my opinion, I think that in a capitalist world, you pay people on the basis of what you need to pay people to get them to do a job that other people can pay them to do somewhere else for more money. You know, you're always competing against other employers. And if people come to work for the county, it's because they think the pay is good enough. And if people don't make a lot as a janitor, for example, his example, well, it may be because, you know, they're at least making enough to make it worth their while to do it here. And we should celebrate the fact that we're able to give those people employment instead of just spilling money around out of need. It's a question of a needs or desire-based rewards or a merit-based reward, and he is a needs-based reward, you know, from each according to his ability to each according to his need. That's kind of the way Lumen thinks of the world. We'll come back to this in a second. Candy has traffic on the fives.
And we're watching a power outage, and like you had mentioned earlier, about 1,500 people without power. This is downtown Pensacola near Garden and Barrancas, near St. Stephen's Catholic Church, it looks like, and then A and Garden as well. Those lights seem to be out. Plenty of side streets, 437-1620. If you see that accident or slowdown or you see that it's repaired, certainly let us know. This is brought to you by the good folks from the Pensacola Little Theater. Disney's Little Mermaid is at PLT from now through August 9th. Journey Under the Sea with a theatrical take. Classic Disney movie. Tickets available at the box office, PensacolaLittleTheater.com. Candy with traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Candy. So back to the conversation at the Escambia County Commission yesterday morning, the budget hearing, talking about basically the division between Ashley Hoffberger, who wants to put in merit pay, Stephen Berry, who says he doesn't want to deal with the headaches of what that would produce, Lumen May, who says he doesn't want merit pay, he wants people at the bottom to get the money and the people at the top make too much already and we shouldn't be paying them more. Mike Kohler.
I would.
Oh, sorry, here, this one first.
Madam Chair, I half support you. So I believe that merit-based employment should be there, but I also believe that there's a different way to doing this, because honestly, all directors aren't equal. A lot of times there's favoritism. And so, and I'm not saying that there would be, but I've seen this even on the federal side.
No, it's true. And, you know, one of the challenges of doing merit-based pay, either for pay itself or for, you know, raises and bonuses and that kind of stuff, is the problem of people, right? Some people are good at this, some people aren't. And also, some jobs are easier to quantify into objective metrics, whereas other jobs are not as easy to quantify into objective metrics. You know, I remember going to the local, can't remember the name of the builder. We went and watched them, and you know, they have a whole system around productivity for rewards and pay for their people, and it's like down to the dime how much a team gets makes based on how many they produce an hour. That works really well for high productivity, but that's in a quantifiable, metrics friendly environment. What do you do for other people? It's not as easy to do that necessarily, and then you wind up getting subjective evaluations and all the rest.
I would say if the board was even to entertain this, say the raise is 2%, everyone gets 1.75, you put 0.25 in, and the directors would go and give an incentive at the end of the year for the best performers. That's how I've seen it done on the federal side, so that those people that are doing above and beyond do get a little extra reward, but you don't punish everyone. So there's ways to do this, but we would have to have a policy before I would support it.
So kind of a hybrid system, right? Take that 2%. Give most of it as across the board and then do some of it for some kind of incentive base. I think you could also do it a little bit differently. You could take the total amount of money that would be that 2% and you could just divide it evenly amongst all the employees. So everybody gets $2,000 or whatever the number would be, or 1500 or 1200. I have not done the math. Instead of giving, you know, 2% to the low, 2% to the high, 2% to the middle. Ashley Hoffberger.
Is that something we're interested in exploring? And Commissioner May, to your point, for those people who are paid less and they're on the bottom end of the pay scale, this would give the opportunity to reward those who really do put in the extra effort.
So why wouldn't we just carve those out, those people who are making less, rather than carve out people who are making higher pay?
I'm saying it would give their department directors the ability to reward the high performers in those departments. Across the board, it would give the directors that ability.
Yeah, he just can't, I think, I don't know, won't, can't, what, wrap his brain around it. He wants to just give all the money to the people who don't make much.
So, I mean, in these budget constraints, we're not going to be able to give everybody what they need. I mean, and so how do you bring parity and you bring equality? You bring everybody up to a fair wage for a fair day's work. So, I mean, to me, that's a further discussion. But why aren't we trying to bring people up now in this crisis I mean, I don't see how we, in good faith and good stewards, not bring up the bottom rung people, giving them 2% when inflation has increased by 4.6%, when the price of eggs and gas have increased, and we're saying to people in this budget, even though we're good stewards, we're going to give you 2%, but your gas prices, your insurance has went up by 12%.
Fair concern, but where are you going to get the money to give all these people what you think they deserve to get because the price of everything has gone up? You're going to raise millage? I mean, you know, like, it's a fine thing to say we want to give more people more money, but where are you going to get it from? Where are you going to allocate it from? In his mind, at least to some degree, it ought to come from the raises proposed for the upper income earners.
I get it. I mean, I think people should perform and hold people accountable. That's going to, I agree with Commissioner Kohler, that's going to almost take an independent person to set the criteria so there won't be any biases from directors to do it. But what we can do.
And that is true.
What we have the power to do in this budget cycle is bring the lower paid employees up to as high as we can. I don't think we can bring them up to probably what they deserve, but we can get them a little higher than what they actually are doing.
So Ashley wants to reward and incentivize and to some degree punish the better versus the worst performing employees. Lumen May wants to reward people who don't make very much regardless of what their productivity is, and not at all for the quality of work of what they do, but entirely on the basis of the fact that they don't make very much money. Two completely incompatible approaches to pay.
Now, another thing to think about is if the board is actually going to consider merit-based, you know, which, again, I think is a very bad idea, but if the board, you know, as a majority is going to entertain that, I would say ask your administrator and ask your directors if that's what they would like. I don't think that that's going to be something that that's never in, you know, 13 or 14 of these budgets, that's never been something that directors or assistant directors have solicited the board or lobbied the board to institute.
And, you know, that's a good idea, too, honestly, is ask the directors if they think this would make a difference in productivity, if this would be a thing that would actually work for their employees to get better work out of them, to offer, you know, merit-based pay increases as opposed to across the board. And typically the answer to that is, well, the better employees like merit pay and the worse employees don't like merit pay. I remember when I was a teacher, I was like, oh, man, pay me for what my students say. You know, don't pay me the same as everybody else because I was killing it. But the people who are not good teachers, like, no, all the same. You know, that's always going to be the case. Wes Moreno.
We've done merit-based raises years ago. And it's, you know, if you're a director or you're a supervisor or division manager, you will hear things like, well, that's the boss's buddy. That's the boss's boy. That's his person. If you're managing people and supervising people, the natural tendency is to lean heavy on those who you know you can rely on, those who you know will be there no matter what. It's not that they're necessarily your friend or your buddy. It's just you know the people that will come to work and do what they need to do, make the day.
You know, and that's a great point, is the perception is that it's the boss's buddy who winds up getting the bonus. But why are they the boss's buddy? Well, because they work hard and the boss likes the people who perform well for them. They have natural affinity for those people and not so much for the others. Now, Nikki Powell, the HR director, raises the obvious point that is, look, it's very, very difficult to do merit-based reviews because you have to come up with a whole matrix and metrics, and that takes time. They do reviews right now for satisfactory, unsatisfactory, but this will take time. Wes reiterating the idea that, you know, like with inmates.
Yeah, even, I tell you, I've supervised inmates for 10 years out on the road, and same thing there. I had inmates I knew I could rely on, you know, and you give them a little more game time. That's just a natural tendency. So you will hear those complaints about favoritism and such. It's just how it is.
Nikki Powell also raises the observation that there are unions. You can't just change their contracts, and they're about half of the workforce in the county. And, you know, Ashley kind of asks for some details, and the short version is there's 1,000 employees making under 50 grand a year, about 600 that make 50 to 70, about 200 that make 70 to 90, and about 70 make over 100. And then in the unions, it's 200 fire, 200 EMS, 400 corrections, and 45 for ECAT. And Lumen is just losing his mind that we have anybody who makes under 50 grand a year.
Madam Chair, that's my point. We just attended a CRA meeting, and we said the median income, $67,000. And we said we got 1,000 people that work for us that serve this community and make less than $50,000. That's what
our
we
median,
can.
Our median is $57,000.
But you got 1,000 people that make less than $50,000. 1,000. 1,000 people that serve this county. That's what we can do in this budget cycle, is address those 1,000 people who make less than the median income in a low-income area, which is a CRA.
Okay, median, not medium. I know it's annoying, too. But the point he's saying is, how can we employ these people and pay them so little? Which the answer is, because in the competitive marketplace of skills and trades and services, their ability to produce value doesn't command a higher wage. Otherwise, if it did, they'd go somewhere else and make more money. And so, do you want the county to be overpaying people for the services? Are we in the business of charity as the county? Which is, again, kind of his view of things. Ashley, in the end.
Okay, so I will table this and bring it back around at some point later, not regarding the budget. That way it will give us more time to collaborate and work with you on that to prepare the managers, and if it's something the board would like. Thank you so much.
It's probably about a year-long process to even institute something like this because of all the evaluation, what you have to do for each job category and so forth. So, you know, probably not going to happen this year, but maybe she can start it early enough, like basically in November, and get it going for next year, possibly. 725 on News Radio 92.3. I just thought it was very interesting to hear the real difference of philosophy on what pay is supposed to do, whether it is supposed to reward productivity or whether it is supposed to benefit people in need, the kind of, you know, productivity for money versus charity for those who need it, who aren't making enough in your estimation, the, you know, capitalist versus the socialist, kind of the view that you see on the board between particularly Ashley Hoffberger and Lumen May. Candy has traffic on the fives.
I was going to say, Lumen would lose his mind if he worked in radio.
Maybe. Yeah, is that thing on?
Just kidding. Yeah, right. I'm kidding. Barrancas, we're showing, it's not an accident, it's a power outage, but it is affecting the traffic lights. Garden and Barrancas, and then A Street and Garden as well, and it is a backup, but there are plenty of side streets, as you know, downtown. That's the only thing I'm seeing right now. Certainly, if you see something, you can let us know. 437-1620, it's Candy with traffic on the fives.
And people are raising questions like, is Lumen donating his salary? Lumen owns a construction company. Does he pay people on the basis of their productivity or on the basis of everybody's...
Oh,
no, those are fair questions. I mean, those are fair questions. That's the whole point. Do you consider that same exact thing when it's your own money that you're spending instead of the people's money? That's right. It sure is. Hey, if you are thinking about buying that next home or, you know, maybe adding a vacation rental or a long-term rental, or you're downsizing, you're upsizing, you're buying your first home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty, they're very, very good at this. And, you know, they sold 206 homes last year, sold 266 in the last 12 months. So the average of 4 weeks has actually gone up to 5 a week recently, which is crazy. But they just get it done. They know how to do it. They know how to stage it, photograph it, list it, follow up. You know, if you ever listen to her on Pep Talk, there's all kinds of reasons why they are just dedicated to treating people well, serving their needs, and applying the excellence that they keep acquiring to getting better and better deals all the time for folks. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty.
Here's today's Strength for Life.
Someone recently asked me, do you believe in guardian angels? And my answer is yes, but only for the Christian. In a rhetorical question, Hebrews 1:14 explains that angels are sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation. So Christian person, since you're saved, an angel has been sent forth to minister to you. And remember, Psalm 103 explains that angels excel in strength. Angels are colossal beings. They are greater in power and might than the strongest of men. However, as strong as angels are, Jesus is stronger. As wonderful as it is to think about the many ways that angels serve us, Jesus served us in a far greater way by giving his life a ransom for us. Angels are created beings, and they're wonderful, but Jesus is the eternal creator God. So rejoice in Jesus today.
For more Strength for Life, check out our website at strengthforlife.church.
Things keep getting bigger and better at Darrell Sewing of Pensacola. Darrell Sewing is the largest sewing machine dealer in the Pensacola area, offering a variety of sewing machines, sergers, and embroidery systems, plus a large selection of sewing machine furniture, craft supplies, and fabrics. Financing is available too. Call them today, 850-438-5444. Darrell Sewing, located at 6705 North Davis Highway, between Creighton and Burgess. Online at sewinginpensacola.com.
I'm Dr. Isaac Williams, running for Escambia County School Board, District 3. District 3 is asking for a change, and I agree. District 3 deserves a representative who will listen, communicate, and stay connected. I'm a retired military leader, a pastor, a community leader, and I'm ready to serve. I'll support teachers, strengthen schools, put students first, and always involve parents. I'm Dr. Isaac Williams. On August 18th, I would appreciate your vote.
Paid political ad by Dr. Isaac Williams, Escambia School Board, District 3.
You're busy. You just need to know what's happening.
What's happening?
Pensacola right now
with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 983, 95.3 and AM 1620. By Menon.
You know, there are some songs that it just like that very first note is captivating, and that was one of them for me. That song, that just, oh, I love that part. 729 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Steve is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. Steve?
Well, Elon Musk says he got carried away with Donald Trump. The tech mogul gave an interview to The Economist and was asked about his brief appointment as the head of Trump's Department of Government Efficiency. Musk says he got, in his words, quote, a little too involved in politics, unquote. And that's what's happening.
Very good. 730 on News Radio 92.3. Coming up next, the Smithsonian gets grilled. Well, the director of the Smithsonian gets grilled on Capitol Hill over the Smithsonian American Museum of History being too woke. We'll talk about that coming up next. You'll find it interesting. I'm Andrew McKay.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Trump attends the rescheduled White House Correspondents' Dinner tonight that was derailed by an assassination attempt back in April. Fox's Jackie Heinrich was sitting just a few feet away from the president.
The event tonight is going to have some new security measures. Some of those new measures include mandatory guest registration for everyone attending. It will pre-vet everyone in that room who will have to show a QR code to get in. There will also be only one entrance.
U.S. military pounding locations inside Iran again, but Iran...
It rejected a U.S. ceasefire deal presented by Iraq. Iranian and Iraqi officials tell the New York Times. The sticking point was reportedly over the Strait of Hormuz. Not interested in a temporary deal that leaves that issue unresolved.
Fox's Metal Rivera reporting. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning and happy Friday. It's 7:31 right now, 77 degrees and sunny. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wade on News Radio 92.3. About 1,500 customers right now in the area of Cervantes Street in Pensacola near the 110 are without power at the moment. The power went out shortly after 6. The crew is on site, and at this point, FPNL estimates it'll be back on about 9. It's also affecting traffic in the area, and we'll hear more about that from Candy in just a few minutes. Relocating Pensacola's recycling drop-off site is not just cutting down on contamination. It's also saving taxpayers a significant amount of money. Mayor D.C. Reeves says the new Leonard Street site costs a fraction of what the city used to spend at the old location.
A reminder that relocating the drop-off from the transfer station to Leonard Street was also a huge taxpayer savings, down to $30,000 for annual operation, and it was $300,000 to operate the Summit drop-off, so that's a 90% savings.
Reeves says the site has also received zero mattresses, furniture, or other bulk items dumping there since the move, a common problem at the previous location. Pensacola police are supportive of the proposed juvenile curfew, Mayor Reeves outlined this week, and spokesman Mike Wood says he believes the ordinance would give officers more tools to deal with the kind of situations that led to the July 5th Palafox shooting.
The chief has been contacted. He's discussed it with the staff and to make sure, you know, how we're going to do this to make sure it's not going to be a burden on manpower. And it's actually not. It's going to help us. It's going to give us some more teeth in order to get these kids off the street and back in the house where they belong at late at night. And I think it's a good thing.
Wood says officers would not be out actively hunting for curfew violators. The ordinance would function as an additional tool when officers already have contacted with somebody causing trouble. Mayor Reeves has outlined a proposed curfew of 11 p.m. on weeknights and midnight on weekends for those about 17 years of age and under. A parent accountability component is also being discussed. Well, this weekend, downtown Pensacola is featuring a great classic movie. Chris Bryant says it's part of the Sanger Summer Movie Series.
An all-time classic movie will kick off the summer
Sanger Theater summer movie series on Sunday. The lineup features one film from each decade beginning in the 70s. On Sunday the 26th, from the 70s, Jaws. From the 80s, on August 2nd, E.T. The 90s features Jurassic Park on August 9th. 2002, Catch Me If You Can appears on August 16th. And Lincoln will close out the series on August 23rd. Each film begins at 3 o'clock. Chris Bryan, News Radio, 92.3.
Right now, let's check out the forecast for the weekend from Channel 3.
Another hot and humid day to round out the work week is on tap this morning, starting out in the upper 70s and low 80s under mostly clear skies. And as we go into the afternoon, highs will be climbing into the low 90s, but feeling more like the triple digits when you factor in the humidity. That continues into the weekend with just a chance for an isolated shower or storm to pop up in the afternoon. I'm meteorologist Marian Caldwell with your WAR First Warning Weather.
Right now, let's check in with Candy for traffic on the 5.
All right, the only thing we're seeing still is that power outage affecting the traffic lights downtown at Garden and Barrancas at A and Garden. So use caution there, and it is a standstill in that area. 437-1620. If you see that accident or slow down, you can text it in. Candy with traffic on the 5s.
Thanks, Candy. Sure. Right now, it's a nice, warm, sunny 76 degrees in Pensacola, 77 in Gulf Breeze, and 77 also in Milton at 735. Next news is at 8. Breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The Trump administration said it is imposing new tariffs of 10 and 12.5% on goods from 60 trading partners over allegations of lax enforcement of forced labor bans. The new levies went into effect at 12:01 a.m. this morning, the same time Trump's temporary 10% global tariff expired. Oil prices rose yesterday to their highest level in nearly 2 months after the latest Iran war escalation. Tom Cloza, chief energy advisor at Gulf Oil, spoke about the impact of Brent crude surpassing $100 a barrel.
It means a return to substantial energy inflation, particularly on the diesel side. That's where we could get to $200 a barrel and really infiltrate every nook and cranny of the economy.
Oil prices have fallen back this morning. Volkswagen posted an operating profit of nearly $4 billion for the April to June period. That's down nearly 10% from a year ago. Futures have risen this morning as oil prices ease. That's Your Money Now.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates, now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates, leave the numbers to the experts.
Buggy Works, the largest golf cart dealer on the Gulf Coast, is leveling up. Headquartered in Pensacola, now serving Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, and Lake Barton, and proud to help the entire coast ride in style. All the top brands, all in one place. Whether you want luxury, lifted, street ready, family friendly, or a fully customized build, your next ride is waiting. Premium carts, in stock, and ready to deliver. Visit BuggyWorks.com. That's BuggyWorks.com.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
Ever notice how the best advice usually comes from someone who actually does this stuff for a living? That's the idea behind Pet Talk, also known as the Pensacola Expert Panel, weekdays at 9.
Good morning, this is Pet Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg.
Meg sits down with local business owners and professionals to talk real solutions, real experience, and real-life questions. Pet Talk with Meg, weekdays 9 to 11 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, informative, local, dependable.
Good morning. We're here to find out about how a once proud American institution fell victim to ideological capture and how to rescue it. The Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of American History was opened in 1964 to instill in Americans and foreign visitors alike an appreciation of this nation's distinctive heritage and to celebrate its singular story as a beacon of freedom and opportunity. But the museum has strayed, I believe, from the original purpose for which it exists and receives federal taxpayer support. I feel like it's become infected by a woke ideology that's seeped into public displays, educational materials, and planning documents.
That is the voice of Tim Burchett. He is the chair of the House Doge Committee. And in case you're wondering, yes, he swallowed all four of the old men at the breakfast place that you see when you're growing up, all the farmers. That's what made his voice what it is, that and 14 cases of whiskey. But anyway, he's mentioning this kind of this problem with the Smithsonian, that the Smithsonian has been captured by woke ideology, and that instead of celebrating the history of the country and celebrating America for being a great and an amazing place where you also will tell its flaws, it has turned into talking about America as a place of flaws primarily, that is an oppressor nation and doesn't do enough to help the minorities, and that's the problem.
American story is the birth and growth of a great nation founded on powerful ideals on which we aim to fully achieve. But in the museum's current telling, history is just an ongoing power struggle between oppressors and the oppressed. Only the oppressed are celebrated, especially illegal immigrants. The museum promotes educational curricula that recommends teachers to avoid using the terms illegal alien and illegal immigrant, while instructing them how to use the terms gender fluidity and gender nonconforming.
So it's embracing all of the leftist ideology and including embracing the idea that America is a problematized place and we need to center people's focus on all of the issues and upsetting elements of America instead of talking about America as a place that people can be proud of and think of as the beacon of freedom for the rest of the world.
It hosts staff discussion groups on how museums can be used to foster social action against white privilege and heteropatriarchy. A museum display even accuses Mickey Mouse of having racist origins.
That's actually correct. We'll get to it in a second.
The many examples of politicization of the museum are well documented in the comprehensive report the White House Domestic Policy Council recently issued on July 4th, the nation's 250th anniversary. The report makes clear that the museum's woke exhibits and materials reflect a broader vision held by the museum leadership, particularly its director, Dr. Aletha Hartig, who is here today with us.
It's Anthea, by the way, but we're going to get to that in just a second. And, yeah, she is a woke activist in her own words.
Dr. Hartig proudly takes credit for changing the museum's mission statement, which no longer uses the term American history or refers to the infinite richness of that history. The museum is now guided by an interpretive plan that ensures all topics focus on the core issues of our time. And do we want to guess what they are? Race and identity, gender and sexuality, environmental change, immigration and migrations, and economic inequality top the list. Also, a Center for Restorative Justice at the museum, created under Dr. Hartig's watch, hosted a decolonization working group to investigate historical harms that result in ongoing systematic oppression. To remove any doubt about her intentions, Dr. Hartig, in her own words, states that she views history as a prime tool of social justice.
And she has said that. So this executive summary, the White House report entitled Saving America's Story, How Ideological Capture at the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of American History Erases Our Heritage. And if you read it, and I will read you some of this because I know that, you know, if you're on the left and maybe some people in the middle are kind of like, you know, side-eye this or, you know, look at this as, come on, are you serious? Have you been to the Smithsonian lately? I have. They're not wrong. There are so many elements of leftist woke ideology in the exhibits, what gets shown. There are some places where it's not true, but there are so many where it is true that it kind of needs to be rescued from itself. And if you look back at the history of it, in making their case to this is from the report. In making their case to Congress in 1953, Smithsonian leadership argued that one of the main reasons that the National Museum of American History should be created is, quote, to place before millions who visit the nation's capital each year a stimulating permanent exposition that commemorates our heritage of freedom and highlights the basic elements of our way of life. That's why it was made. It is supposed to be a pro-America museum. In 1955, then-Smithsonian Secretary Leon Carmichael testified to Congress that if authorized, the museum would, quote, tell the story of American national progress and cement America's progress for citizens and foreign visitors alike. He said the museum we envision is planned to instill in each citizen a deepened faith in our country's destiny as champion of individual dignity and enterprise. Equally, it is conceived to instill each in foreign visitors admiration and respect for our ever-expanding social and technological horizons. Now, if that's the goal, if that's the mission, and in teaching history, you will, of course, also mention the flaws, but what is the purpose? Is the purpose to savage America and tell us all the things we should be ashamed of? That's kind of the model of the left these days, and it's been moving that way recently pretty heavily. Then director of the National Museum, Remington Kellogg, noted at the opening in 1964 that the new museum was intended to, quote, awaken in citizens and foreigners alike a clear understanding of the inspiring story of the United States, its origins, struggles, development, traditions, and strengths. And then at the dedication, Lyndon B. Johnson in 64, I would hope there will come to this building the children of the nation. For here is recorded, as William Faulkner expressed it, the agony and the sweat of the human spirit, the victory of freedom and genius of our own country. Here young people see with their own eyes even, yes, even to touch with their own hands, the ripe fruit of America's historical harvest. Whitney's cotton gin, Singer's sewing machine, McCormick's Reaper, Edison's phonograph, Bell's telephone. They're all here, a part of this treasure house of our inheritance. The more we understand the meaning of the past, the more we appreciate the winning of the future. If this museum did nothing more than illuminate our heritage so that others could see a little better our legacy, however so small the glimpse, it would fulfill a noble purpose. And that's the thing, is like these days, weirdly, being on the left has become synonymous with being critical of America, with not being particularly patriotic, with not loving and celebrating the country. You know, and when I start to talk about this idea, think about how you react to this. I start to talk about this idea of the Smithsonian is a place to celebrate America. I mean, it's actually paid for by us. Why should it be critical of us, right? But it's going to celebrate us. And some people are thinking, ooh, I don't know about that. I don't know if that's, you know, everybody thinks that way, right? That sounds more like a Republican thing. When did it become a Republican thing to celebrate America? But it kind of is. That kind of notion that you would just believe we're great and amazing and that people come here for reasons is kind of weirdly more a thing on the right. You know, loving the flag and loving the anthem. And, you know, when you have people like Sonny Hostin on The View saying that, I don't know, seeing the flag makes me feel unsafe and makes me think of white supremacy culture. Like, how did that happen? That's crazy. Now, Anthea Hardig, the current director since 2009, has explicitly stated that she sees history as a, quote, prime tool of social justice, and one of her roles connecting research and scholarship in activism and advocacy, and her work to reframe the traditional celebratory narrative of U.S. history for visitors. She has a personal head start, propped up as I was and I am by the cushions of whiteness and the pillows of the bourgeoisie. That's a quote from her. She believes the museum profession has to figure out how we're going to problematize the 250th anniversary of the signing, which they did nothing for, of Declaration of Independence in 2026, that loving America is very complicated, and that objects in the museum's collection should be used to move attention away from the Anglo-centric focus on the American founding. These are not the words of an objective historian, this is the report, but rather those of an activist advancing an ideological agenda contradictory to the museum's founding purpose of fostering patriotism. The report is scathing and accurate. I'll come back to more because it gets very interesting when she's actually talking to one of the representatives. Candy has traffic on the fives.
It looks like that power outage still affecting downtown and affecting the traffic lights at Garden and A Street and Garden and Barrancas. And there is quite a standstill. It's a backup. But again, plenty of side streets to get around that area. If you see something or that changes, let us know. 437-1620, Candy with traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Candy. So Representative Brandon Gill, his demeanor makes me laugh. It's very low-key, as in he's asking very abrasive, aggressive questions, but he's asking them in a way that does not match the content of the question. And Anthea Hardig, who is the director of the Smithsonian, is answering here. Here's how this goes.
Director Hardig, thank you for being here. Would you say that the goal of history, even if it's not properly carried out, would you say that the goal of history is to be objective?
Thank you, sir, for the question. You know, I think that there are many goals of history, and certainly as you collect, as we do, examine evidence, create scholarship.
Is objectivity one of the goals of history?
We strive to be objective and nonpartisan and not based on any ideology.
So it's one of the goals. Doesn't that seem a little bit concerning? It certainly does to me, because as part of this white supremacy document that your organization has promoted, objectivity is a core and defining aspect of white supremacy culture. Do you think that it's the goal of the Smithsonian Institution to promote white supremacy culture?
Because there's actually a document the Smithsonian has promoted entitled White Supremacy Culture from Dismantling Racism, a Workbook for Social Change Groups, that they used and promoted on their website. And so what he's looking at is, well, it says that objectivity is a element of white supremacy culture, and you're now saying that you're in favor of objectivity, which of course as a historian you should be, but aren't you concerned that your own documents indicate that that means you're a white supremacist? The, again, turning the absurd against the people who advocate for it.
Sir, do you mind sharing with me which document? It's
white supremacy culture right here. This is part of the mass action toolkit that your organization has promoted for several years now under your leadership. Are you promoting a white supremacy culture at the Smithsonian?
Am I promoting a white?
Ma'am, is this a difficult question?
No, sir. I'm just thinking about the mass action toolkit. We didn't develop it. But back to your question, no, we're not promoting any ideology.
Does it concern you that your goal is objectivity, one of your goals is objectivity, and your mass action toolkit references objectivity as a defining characteristic of white supremacy culture?
It's not our toolkit.
It is your toolkit. You've been promoting it for quite some time.
We did not come up with a toolkit, sir.
But you've been promoting it.
It is used as a reference, I believe, probably in 2019, 2020.
Yes, under your leadership, it has been used as a reference.
Yeah. That's right.
Is Mickey Mouse racist?
Mickey Mouse is not racist.
It's not racist. According to the Smithsonian Institution, one of your exhibits referenced Mickey Mouse as representing, quote, vestiges of longstanding traditions of blackface minstrelsy. Would you describe that as racist?
No, the historical trajectory of the origins of Mickey Mouse tie directly
So Mickey Mouse is rooted in racism. Is that your testimony?
No, sir. It's rooted in minstrelsy.
Minstrelsy. You don't think that blackface minstrelsy is racist?
It had certain obvious racial overtones that have been well documented.
You think that that's problematic, that Mickey Mouse also has those racial overtones?
It's not for me to determine what's problematic. It's determined to me what's accurate.
Is that right?
Now it's time to say goodbye to all.
Or as soon as we get rid of the racism at the heart of our icon.
Why?
Because we're racists. If you accept the premise of all of these, you know, critical race theory critiques and the premise of this white supremacy culture document that the Smithsonian had been advocating under Anthea Harding's leadership. And so they continue on, like, all of the crazy things.
Is it important to be polite?
Excuse me, sir?
Is it important to be polite?
Yes, sir.
It's also interesting because the same mass action toolkit that your organization has been promoting references politeness as a defining characteristic of white supremacy culture. Ma'am, are you a white supremacist?
No, sir.
You're not. Can you help me square why your organization says that being polite is part of being a white supremacist?
I'm not exactly familiar with that passage of the mass action toolkit, which is
I can show you the passage right here.
Pardon me?
I said I just read you the passage from it.
And then your question was, sir?
We're going to move on.
And by the way, he's right. That is one of the there's this whole list of things that people who critique what they call white supremacy culture say represents it. Like, you know, believing in merit, believing in quantity over quality, defensiveness, timeliness, punctuality, perfectionism, sense of urgency. And politeness is one of those things. Objectivity. These are all tools of the white supremacy patriarchy, according to them. And so when they're in this document, he's saying, well, you believe in these things. Are you actually a violator of these things? And, I mean, He's making the point that what the Smithsonian is emphasizing is that stuff, is that leftism culture, which, again, I was there and I saw. I don't have any problem with celebrating women in science and technology, but the space and the Museum of Space and what's the name of it? I can't remember now. The one that was only partially open at the time we were there was filled with all of these orange, like 3D printed statues of all of these famous women in technology. And I thought, well, that's an interesting take, but that's the kind of thing you see. Or, you know, if you go into the gift shop, you can buy Latina Power merchandise.
What is Latina Power?
What is Latino Power?
Latina Power.
Latina Power would be the forces derived from being a Latina.
Do you think that it's appropriate for the Smithsonian Institution to sell Latina Power paraphernalia? Hats, mugs, other things that say Latina Power?
I believe that the merchandise our store sells.
I'm asking you if it's appropriate.
Tries to reflect the richness of the communities.
So your testimony is that it is appropriate?
Those are your words, sir.
I'm asking you, is it appropriate to sell Latina Power paraphernalia? It's a yes or no question.
I don't have control over what is sold.
I'm asking
in
you
stores.
If it's appropriate. I didn't ask you if you have control over it. Is
I
it appropriate?
You, sir. Yeah.
Yes or no?
Again, we strive to represent all Americans and including.
Is it
in
appropriate,
our
yes or no?
We strive to represent all Americans in our museums, including in our merchandise.
Is that right? My yes, time's
sir.
Up.
Thank you, sir.
You know, when you find yourself defending absurd things that you obviously can't defend, because if you could defend them, you would answer. And instead, she's taking this, you know, diplo-speak approach of, well, we try to represent all. Just this is the problem. You get these people who make decisions, and they wind up getting held to account for them, and they cannot answer or will not answer or will not be like normal people. So I don't know what's going to happen with her. I would not be surprised if she gets removed from her position, because this was brutal to watch. And again, the document from the White House that came out on the 4th of July is scathing in its critique of what the Smithsonian has become, as opposed to being a place that, yes, teaches history, also teaches the problems, but primarily is there as a way of advocating for America and celebrating America, which only makes sense given that it's our national museum. 756 on News Radio 92.3 Candy has traffic for us.
Still watching that power outage. It looks like downtown still backing things up on A Street and Garden, and it's backed up quite a way. So it looks like the power outage is still in effect. If you see something, that's the only traffic thing I see right now. 437-1620 Candy with traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Candy. If you're looking for something sweet a little bit later on today, Small Cakes Cupcake and Creamery is fantastic. I've had their, oh, man, their cupcakes are very good. Really, really good. Hot fudge sundae, lemon drop, wedding cake, red velvet, pink vanilla, birthday cake. I had several, too many, but they're awesome. You know, handcrafted, of course. Same thing for the slow-churned, creamy, flavorful ice cream that they serve. Birthday cake flavor, vanilla bean, cookies and cream, salted caramel. Sorry, I know you can't get them until later this morning. You're hungry for it now. They do catering. They do weddings. They do birthdays, all that kind of stuff. Or just, you know, a gift for you or just a gift for a friend or, you know, loved one or, you know, buy two, take one, tell them you got it for them. Anyway, freshly baked gourmet everything. Their slogan is maybe a cupcake will help. Next to the Starbucks and the Chick-fil-A on Bayou and 9th Avenue. Small Cakes Cupcake and Creamery.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru. The men and women here at Anderson Subaru are committed to the Subaru Love Promise, a promise between us and our communities, a promise to make the Gulf Coast a better place to live, to work, and to play. And we're proud of what we've accomplished. From our ongoing support of the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association and Ascension Sacred Heart to volunteering with Feeding the Gulf Coast, we've conducted clothing drives for Loaves and Fishes and charity auctions for Gulf Coast Kids House, and we support Sherwood Elementary School in multiple ways. We're committed to the pets in our communities, too, by supporting dog adoption events with Phoenix Rising Rescue, Barktoberfest with Pensacola Humane Society, and Potty Gras with Wolfgang Park and Brews. And the love continues. Through donations, volunteering, and monetary support, Anderson Subaru is making a difference in the lives of our neighbors and our community. The Subaru Love Promise. That's a promise we intend to keep at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Each Sunday at 7:30 a.m., the Bible Baptist Bookstore of Pensacola, Florida brings you Theological Seminar with teacher Peter S. Ruckman, founder and president of the Pensacola Bible Institute. He will teach you what the Bible says about the subject, not merely what it is presumed to teach.
Tune in this Sunday at 7:30 a.m. for a theological seminar with Dr. Peter S. Ruckman, brought to you by Bible Baptist Bookstore on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
This is a statement from the National Weather Service.
September 2020. The National Hurricane Center predicted Hurricane Sally would come ashore in Mississippi. But then, Sally made a right turn and surprised us by coming ashore here with a destructive power we have not seen since Hurricane Ivan, which is why you should keep your radio on News Radio 92.3 for all the latest watches, warnings, and full team coverage should the storm make that unexpected change of course. News Radio 92.3.
There we go. 7:59 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay, and Steve is in the newsroom today for David with a headline for us. Steve?
Well, the White House Correspondents Association is going to try again to hold the Correspondents' Dinner featuring the president. It was to be held last April, but had to be rescheduled after it became the scene of an apparent assassination attempt. That rescheduled dinner is tonight in Washington, D.C.
I hope it's good. It's one of my favorite events. I hope it's funny.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3, WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.